Hello, you're listening to Tall Stories on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. This week, we're in Vienna, where the local government is the largest landlord in Europe. It owns almost a quarter of all properties in the city. Many of them sprouted up during a period of socialist government known as Red Vienna, which made a massive social housing push following the First World War and the breakup of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Preceded by the grassroots Vienna settlers movement and cut short by the ascent of fascism in 1934, Red Vienna is a unique example of how to do social housing. Monocle's Alexei Korolev in Vienna reports.
Am 9. November sind alle Männer und Frauen Deutsch-Österreichs zur Urne berufen, pflichtgemäß ihre Stimme abzugeben.
This is Vienna's famous Red Mayor, Karl Zeitz, speaking to the nation in November 1930.
Und was ist der Erfolg? Wir fragen nicht die Kapitalisten.
Zeitz warns against creeping fascism and lists the achievements of his socialist administration. One of them is affordable homes for that backbone of the economy, the proletariat.
Wir sind das Bauvolk der kommenden Welt. Wir sind der Seemann, die Saat und das Feld.
Zeitz's mayorship from 1923 to 1934 came to be known as Red Vienna, and it brought a revolution in the city's social housing policy.
So if I had to describe it shortly, Red Vienna is built politics of effective redistribution from the rich to the poor, so the opposite of what we do have today. So taxing the rich, even in terms of like luxury taxes or the so-called housing construction tax, and implementing with this means large-scale housing, and that actually spread throughout the city, no matter if that was a bourgeois district or the first district or any.
That's Gabu Heindl. She's an Austrian architect and architectural theoretician, and she's written extensively about social housing in Vienna.
And the most amazing thing is that these symbols of effectively redistribution politics are on the one hand, still standing today, yeah? Not only standing, but being used today, and on an aesthetic level or an everyday level, on every single one of these houses, you will find big red letters that basically states that this housing complex was built in the year so-and-so, and then it says, from the proceeds of the housing construction tax. Imagine any politics today that would write in big, bold red letters onto a housing facade that you did something proudly by taxing the rich.
Because of their enormous size, these buildings are sometimes ironically referred to as Volkswohnungspaläste, or people's apartment palaces. And the largest and grandest of them all is this one, Karl Marx Hof.
This is actually the open courtyard, which is opening up to the bourgeois hills of Vienna. To both directions, it extends, I think in total it's more than a kilometer long. So it's the longest housing block or housing scheme in the world, I think.
I'm being given a tour by architect Andreas Rumpfhuber, who has spent years studying Red Vienna.
It was built between 1927 and 1933, and it's, you know, in a way it's a symbolic icon of Red Vienna. Not only because it has this name of Karl Marx Hof and it's, you know, obvious vastness, but I think it's also quite interesting. Like up the slopes, you'd have the bourgeois villas, but also at that time, Europe's biggest stadium with football clubs playing here. But also, like at that time, they would have opera events and stuff like that in summer. So you could imagine, like with also with these huge doors or entrances to that housing scheme that open up to the hill, you'd have every second week, I'd say, a procession of laborers, workers, you know, passing these doors onto the stadium to support their club.
All in all, some 64,000 flats were put up during that period. This new accommodation created an entirely new community, and that community was willing to fight and die for it. When a brief civil war broke out on the streets of Vienna in 1934 following a fascist coup, Karl Marxhof was right at the heart of it. But despite heavy bombardment, it held firm and has remained to this day a bastion of socialist solidarity. Andreas Rumpfhuber again.
There was already a certain kind of community in the interwar years. You know, it was a labor workers project. So there was a community there, and of course, like the site itself, Karl Marxhof is standing on, only 20% of it is being built on, you know? Mm. So it creates, in relation, when you understand or see Wilhelminian time city extension of Vienna, die Gründerzeit, mm-hmm. where it was much, much denser. Yeah? And here it's really kind of luxury that is being produced for the workers. So that's also kind of something that creates an atmosphere of, let's say, abundance of space, and also creates, of course, a certain kind of atmosphere of collectivity.
Hmm? Vienna's local government continued building social housing well into the 2000s, but it has never produced anything remotely comparable in scope and ambition to the Red Vienna superblocks. Gabo Heindl.
It's not that nothing has been built after 45. There was a lot of communal housing activity. But what actually changed was that there wasn't this pathos anymore in terms of like giving it really a clearly workers' castle-like structure or a kind of proud neighborhood symbol in terms of like that it was not only housing, but it was really housing combined with public amenities, with swimming pools, with a laundry, children's playgrounds, etc. So there's a lot of public extra spaces that were being built also during Red Vienna.
For Gabo Heindl, these buildings still mean opportunity and modernity.
The model of Red Vienna per se, like the buildings from the 1920s and 1930s, are certainly past buildings, yeah? But I would consider them sediments of a politics that can and should be reactivated. Yeah? We should learn from them, they are still here, but if they become a model for future housing, then I would say we should critically inherit them. Yeah? Imagine future politics that is more, brings a fairer distribution of space and the possibility to make sure that everybody's right to housing is being institutionalized even. Yeah? But then, as I said before, critically would also mean that for future models, we would have to see how it could be less paternalistic, how basically there could be more individual engagement also with the housing complex itself. Could there be more participation? Of course, these houses would look different. However, some of the features, as I already said, I think are still very up to date.
Wir sind das Bauvolk der kommenden Welt.
Through decades of change, Red Vienna architecture has stayed true to its original purpose. Now, as then, it gives board and lodging to the workers and low-income families, and it also makes them proud of who they are and where they live. But above all, it became an example of how to do social housing and how to do it right. For Monocle in Vienna, I'm Alexei Korolev.
You've been listening to Tall Stories, a Monocle 24 production. Our thanks to Alexei Korolev for today's episode. And remember, tune in every week for the full 30-minute edition of The Urbanist. I'm Andrew Tuck. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, city lovers.